Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another exciting episode of the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live on American Freedom Radio. And my very special guests today for the Man Talk 4 is David Whitehead, the man whose dojo there is no mercy in, and also Randy Morgans, the man from whom the church plays their organs. Welcome, gentlemen.
Good evening. Welcome.
Now, just something that occurred to me just before coming on air, guys, just randomly. Does anybody else appreciate the irony that the US has the world's largest intelligence agencies,
yet the population have basically just become really large and unintelligent?
Well, I think that is a good observation to make, because that word intelligence is implying that, of course, they're just talking about data gathering and having information at their disposal. But when you look at the population, of course, we're referring to the lack of ability to realize that they are being surveilled by their government against their constitutional rights and freedom. So, yeah, that kind of sums it up.
Yeah. Somebody said that it was sort of a yin and yang thing, you know. You can't have the one spectrum without the other.
Yeah, well, that principle, I think it applies more to the processes of nature. A lot of people try to apply it to, like, you know, good and evil, and we have to have a balance of both good and evil in order to maintain balance. And I really don't think that that's what that's referring to. I think that what we're talking about is an overall balance between polarities of energy, where we have, you know, the yin yang representing electricity and magnetism, masculine, feminine, etc. But then when you throw in that whole idea of good and evil, it now starts to bring in the notion that evil is something that's natural and therefore should not be resisted. And therefore, we need a proper balance of evil, because as the South Park movie said, without evil, there can be no good. So it must be good to be evil sometimes, right? So it kind of poses quite the paradigm when you bring that into that concept. I just think there's a bit of an error in looking at it like that, personally.
Maybe people don't know exactly what good is. I've defined it like this just this morning as well. Good is about having restraint. Evil is about having no restraint. And that's really all it's about. If you're a good person, you see something, you want to do it, you want to take it, you want to kill that person, you want to do something real nasty, you want to invade a country or something like that. If you're a good person, you restrain yourself. If you're a bad person, on the other hand, if you're actually evil, no restraint. Yep, kill that person. Kill his family too.
So it's about impulse control.
Oh, yeah.
Well, they even say in the definition of a psychopath that they have an inability to delay gratification. So it's kind of interesting how the society that's been created and all the different elements contained within that display nothing but an encouragement, especially when we're talking about, you know, we're doing the Man Talk project here and talking about how the minds of the population have been infected. There's no ability for people anymore to really delay gratification. You look at the addiction that people have to their smartphones, you know, all this online media. And of course, you can use those tools for good. I mean, look at what we're doing right now. We're broadcasting live on the internet. We can post this and listen to it on our smartphones, and we can share information. But what happens is that people are looking for instant gratification now. They want fast food. They want fast results. I see it even in my martial arts studio, where people want to come in there and they expect me to train them to be Bruce Lee within the first month. And of course, I have to explain to them that that is absolutely impossible. It takes a lot of dedication, discipline, time, commitment in order to be able to be successful at anything. So it seems like we're moving more and more away from the values because of the fact that we're being pushed into that very mindset of psychopathy that is represented in our society.
So, and psychopaths don't actually have values.
Well, I know both of you are spiritual men, and the spiritual aspect as opposed to the impulse of the material physical world is actually a great contrast. Most of our culture now are not truly spiritual. Many people are religious, but they don't understand the dynamic that goes into, we call it meditation. They don't understand the process of slowing down the mind and the body and getting very, very quiet. This is something that I've talked about a lot on all my radio shows over the years, was the fact that if you want to get close to yourself, if you want to get close to your creator, you have to go very deep inside yourself. And most people in this culture now do not have the ability to sit still for 5 seconds, much less a period of 30 minutes where they just go very deeply into a state.
Most people can't even sit through a movie these days.
It's true. The whole theater is lit up with everybody's faces because they're all on Facebook or Twitter or something, I guess, talking about the movie. And I don't know. It's just, it's interesting. The lack of focus that's there, that's actually needed. I mean, I just looked at this these statistics. I'm not sure if you guys were looking at this, but this just came out about the situation with Fukushima. And this is what people need to start focusing their attention on. And not in a way of looking at it and going, oh my God, the world is being radiated as we speak, and we should all be in a space of fear. It's not about that. I think it's about just being aware of what really matters. And of course, you know, everybody, they work hard. They want to come home and just, you know, get their minds out of the day, and they don't want to really think about anything. But what if they realize that that's why the society is set up as it is? We're all in debt. We're all just trying to make ends meet every day. We're completely self-absorbed now. It's very hard for the population to try to do anything that would bring about any kind of change. And when we see something where we're actually, we kind of have a gun to our head in a way with this issue and many, many other issues that Vinny, you cover on your show, and we all talk about and try to work towards solutions on. But it's that, again, that ability to even have the attention span to take this into consideration and to go within and ask, well, what's going on in my own mind, in my own body, in my own spirit that's preventing me from moving forward in my own personal life? And then if we can start there, maybe we can bring some kind of solution to the table of how we can affect change globally. So it's needed, I think, especially when we're talking about men and what the role of men should be in our modern society. I mean, the men were the warriors. They were the ones that stood up and tried to protect the village and tried to protect their families and provide for their families. And that is something that's been taken away. We've talked about that on other shows. And so these are the things that we need to start really focusing on and maybe taking our heads out of this whole social media thing a little bit more.
I think Chief Sitting Bull said it best. When the white man came, the men would go fishing all day. The women would take care of the children, and the men would come home, would feast and make love all night, and repeat the process over again in the morning. Only the white man is stupid enough to think he can improve on that.
Oh, exactly. I think, who was it? Well, what's his name again? Louis C.K. He did a pretty good comedy skit on that as well. And I won't repeat it because it's loaded with F-bombs, but it's pretty funny. Check it out.
Well, you could just... you could recite it, but replace the F-bomb with the word frack.
The frack or the fook. We're fooked now. The Fukushima. That's the new F-word now, I guess.
Yeah. We're either fracked or we're fookered.
Fracked or fookered, yeah.
And if you happen to be in the Middle East, then you're definitely Shiite Muslim.
Yeah, up Shiite Creek.
Yeah. Well, I do like them. I do like their spirit, though, in the Middle East, because despite the fact that they get treated like Shiite, they still maintain a Sunni disposition.
It's true.
When we talk about the world and this kind of thing, I don't know about you guys, but I haven't traveled all that much, haven't really seen the world. And this is what I also find very interesting, is that people who have seen the world often try and take it over, you know, president or whatever. All the rest of us just kind of want to keep to ourselves and, you know, keeping our own little borders, take care of people in the street and what have you. And I think that's really the small little social network and fabric that we need, but have basically crucially lost. And as a direct result of losing that direct connection to everybody about you, you get this kind of this apathy or this loneliness type sensation, like nobody's actually there to really, really care about you. You don't get enough hugs or enough sunlight or whatever because you're stuck inside on your iPhone or whatever. You know, it's almost like our social interaction is devoid of the substance which actually necessitated social interaction in the first place, in the primordial sense.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I personally, I'm the kind of person that I've always been dying to travel. I've only been to a few places, been to Europe a little bit, and I've been all over Canada and just, you know, a few places in the States. But I would love to be able to go to Machu Picchu in Peru, go to Egypt, go to, you know, anywhere, actually. You know, we live on a beautiful planet, and it would be incredible to be able to go around and see it. Even going to Alaska, I had some friends that went on a cruise in Alaska, and they took some photographs, and it was just stunning. You know, it'd be an incredible thing to be able to have that spectrum of awareness where you didn't look at it only as, you know, you and your house, but you started to be able to have a global perspective of looking at, you know, just how, what we have, the wealth that we all have. We all have, we live on a wealthy planet. The planet is rich. It's got everything that we need. It's given us everything that we need. And yet here we are trying to hold up this synthetic system that's been superimposed on top of that natural system, and we are working to try to sustain it. And in that effort, we're effectively destroying ourselves. And so for me, being able to travel would be something that would be a way of expanding awareness. And it's sad to see that we can't even think on a planetary level, let alone a cosmic level, let alone realizing that we are, you know, we're on a blue marble flying through space, and we're surrounded by trillions of galaxies, and, you know, the possibilities are endless. And, you know, so for me, it's always trying to have that bigger perspective and then bringing it down into the, you know, the sort of the macro level, but, or the micro level, but, you know, each to their own, I guess.
It does kind of feel like we're on a kind of shut-in mode. I mean, there are people that have the luxury to travel, but it is a luxury. And even the ability to gather together. I had a chance to travel out to Boulder, Colorado to a conference the second week of October. And some of these people were people that I know from the internet, people that I work with, the people with the Global Breakthrough Energy Movement. But the 4 days that I spent out there was really a study in real-time human interaction. It was like a tribe of people that came together. And I was amazed at how different the experience was. People who got together and talked, people who got together and had meals, people who got together and hugged each other and looked at each other in the eye and exchanged ideas. The dynamic was completely different. And it's a poverty that travel is considered to be a luxury in this world, that there is this concept that we're not really entitled to freely travel anymore the way we should be able to at this point in our technological development. The cost of air freight, of air flights, should be astronomically cheap, and yet it's incredibly expensive because of the way that everything has been manhandled and mismanaged by the government overseers who make travel just a living hell anymore. I mean, flying is not fun. It is not fun to go places into weird jurisdictions and be rectally probed by authorities and to be constantly observed. Travel should be something that we all do as a part of our lives.
They've right. turned travel into alien abduction. I mean, think about it. You get looked at the whole time. You get anally probed. They got all of this advanced technology to scope you out and suss your stuff. You're totally under their control, and it's not fun.
Oh, and now they want to arm these guys. These guys are, because of this whole fiasco with this shooter,
LAX airport.
And now the TSA, of course, is just like, well, I guess we all need to be armed, and we could be the, you know, Gestapo 2.0 and make sure that nobody comes in there with any underwear bombs or anything like that. And, you know, it's just getting absolutely ridiculous. And it goes back to how many people in even American history that have warned that you can't have freedom and security. You can't be going only for security and asking your government to provide you security and expect them to keep your freedoms and your rights intact. It's impossible. And, you know, if we were all empowered and worked as individuals and worked tightly in our communities, like what Randy was talking about, there wouldn't be any need to have some government group of thugs in there patrolling every part of orifice in your body, making sure that you're not some kind of quote-unquote...
Well, that assumes that there actually is a need for that now, and they never was.
Well, exactly.
No, Go back to the original premise of 9/11 and the story that was originally told about that very dark day. The story that was portrayed to us was that that air flight which hit the towers, the first plane coming out of Boston, was hijacked by men with box cutters. Now, I fly a fair amount. I mean, I don't fly all the time, but I travel enough that I'm in touch with what goes on an airplane and who is on airplanes. I can't imagine a flight where three or four or five or however many of these so-called alleged Islamic terrorists could take over an airplane where a bunch of men are sitting in the plane and they would not attempt to overtake them. A box cutter is not a great weapon. It wouldn't be my first choice. And quite frankly, I never believed that story. But every step along the way, they hoik it up a little bit more so that there's more fear and people never stop to examine the original scenario, which was how in the hell did guys with box cutters take over a plane full of people, some of which must have been men who would have theoretically been physically capable of overcoming it.
Well, maybe they were serving all the drinks in the aisle out of BPA containing feminizing plastic bottles. Ergo, there was no real bit on the plate. We'll be right back after the break. For the Man Talk Project, for Randy Morgan and David White, here back in the folks.
Bonkers. Bonkers.
Some people think I'm bonkers, but I just think I'm free. And I'm just living my life, there's nothing crazy about me. Some people pay for thrills, but I get mine for free. Man, I'm just living my life, there's nothing crazy about me.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. It might be a little bit bonkers, but I assure you there's nothing crazy about me. There's nothing crazy about wanting to know really, really interesting, scary, and diabolical information. Wait a second. I might have that confused with something else. Maybe this is a really bad idea that I've stumbled onto here doing this show and talking to all the people that I do. Maybe I'm corrupting my mind with all sorts of different information so that I've got something accidentally called perspective. It's a bad thing. You know, don't you hate that? People who just refuse to get perspective on things. They don't want to listen to you because they think that they know everything about you when obviously they know nothing. You ask them a single question about what's going on and they can't answer. And they give you some kind of smart aleck remark like, oh, I'm sure you've got some kind of big conspiratorial explanation for us. Are you telling me that you don't have any explanation of any kind? Well, oh, okay. So you trust this big... You trust this big organization, do you, bro? You trust the president? Who funds him? You don't know? Well, I'm sure you've got some kind of an answer. So let me get this straight. You trust somebody who you've never met, you don't know, and you have no idea who's financing him, and you have no idea what his policies are. Right, is that the person that you trust? You've got that much information on somebody who you place the trust of your life in and your very like opinion in your country. And you're the one who's calling me nuts? I'm the one who's crazy? I think you got your head up your ass, mate. All right? Tell you the truth? Just shush. Okay?
You're just a conspiracy theorist. You don't know anything about it. Blah, blah, blah. Yeah. That's the response. I mean,
these kind of people should just lie down before they hurt themselves.
Yeah. You know, it's just the fact that there are people who do research and try to find out answers to mysteries and unsolved situations.
How
and then there are people who believe what they're told.
Friggin' dare people look for answers themselves. Why don't they just trust authority? I mean, authority's never been abused before, has it?
Never. It'll never happen here, Vin. It'll never happen here. It's only historical, and it's only everywhere else. It's never going to happen in Canada. It's never going to happen in the United States. It's never going to happen in New Zealand. It's only everywhere else that I am presently.
I love it how people who don't study history tell you things are all historical. They're not going to happen again.
Yeah. Well, did you really watch the History Channel, though?
Yeah, that'll work out real well. Really studying history is a major task because, well, it's been written by people who have rewritten it from its original versions. That's why a lot of the work that I think all of us do in having people on who are doing the deep historical research is so important, because this is painful shit, realizing that your history's been rewritten and things did not happen the way the consensus collective reality stream tells you it's happened.
Yeah, well, I mean, we can't say the S word on the FCC regulated.
Oh, I'm sorry.
You have to say Shiite Muslim.
Shiite. Yeah.
Okay. Well, I do think that panic is setting in. All right. I don't know about you guys, but I've been kind of getting this kind of feel, like a vibe, like people are panicking, like people are getting really, really like angry. Or they can't control it. I've been feeling this a little bit.
I'm glad you brought
it up. I just feel like
I'm...
It's like I'm itching for a fight.
Yeah. No, I've noticed it too, even in my own circles of friends and stuff. But obviously, it seems everybody's getting a little antsy. There's a lot of infighting going on and a lot of backstabbing and name-calling, and it's just getting really weird. And I don't know if it's some people are like, oh, it's Mercury retrograde or whatever. And I don't know. I think that ultimately we're dealing with the consciousness of humanity in a way. The fact that we're all on the trail of criminals and we're all trying to figure out what the hell went wrong, and everybody's head's kind of spinning, even people that are seasoned in this work. And it's sort of reaching a boiling point, and there's only so long that you can stay sane watching this continue, you know, watching this continue without really any real opposition or real change taking place. So I think people, they get frustrated, they get very closed-minded in the sense that they all only focus on their own work and their own lives, and they don't really take as much time anymore to go out and expand and listen to other people's perspectives and to take that time to have quiet time to themselves. I know for myself it's a challenge, and I really struggle to keep my life in balance where I have, you know, I run a business, I do my show, I do a lot of research, I have a family, I have all kinds of commitments, and trying to also squeeze in some quiet time, like what Randy was talking about, you know, 20-30 minutes a day of just clearing your mind, focusing, breathing, trying to get rid of that stress. And I think a lot of people out there, they don't have those outlets. They're overworking themselves, and maybe that's kind of contributing to that.
I think the other aspect of this is that the economic control grid that we live in, and it's global, it doesn't matter whether you denominate in dollars, pounds, lira, yen, the economic control grid is a psychological process. And as the screws are being tamped down here and people are realizing that things are getting tighter, budgets are getting tighter, prices are going up, it begins to drive the primal aspects of survival, which are usually off of the zero-sum game, which means I must conquer you so that I can win, because there is only so much of this. So we wind up again back in the cave, beating each other over the head with bones for the perceived nugget at the end of the cave. And that really is kind of a baseline thing with the economic system, because people do not know how to think right now outside of the economic box.
They're not used to dealing with crisis.
Well, yeah, and if they can keep this, and I've kind of been thinking about this as well. Everybody's been saying, oh, economic collapse. Well, first of all, it's already collapsed. It's already fiat. Yes. It's completely being made up. But I don't know. What about you guys? I don't think they're necessarily just going to crash it one day and it's just going to be absolute out of control mayhem. They're fully well aware that a lot of people, it's going to be very difficult to manage that situation.
These people have a tactic. Slowly. Yeah. But surely, okay? They don't do shock and awe grand scale. They do it on a contained scale and limit the media coverage. They don't collapse whole global economies unless there's something really, really awesome in it that they're going to spark off with. So if you want the global economy to get back on track, what they do is then they instigate a little incident which propagates a world war. And I think that's what they did on 9/11, actually. We've been living in the in a kind of soft kill, kind of slash cold war sort of thing, where the US can just seize geopolitical control of remaining resources in order to secure it for the 21st century, the American 21st century. But the globalists, on the other hand, who control America and pretty much every other freaking country, just want to use the Americans as sort of like a, I don't know, like a weapon on the battlefield kind of thing. Like they're playing some giant game of Risk, except they're risking people's lives rather than little pieces of plastic. And it occurs to me that they're going to squeeze the economic situation tightly, to the point where people will no longer be able to afford their homes. They're going to increase the taxes at the same time as increase the prices of everything, so that people will very, very gradually have no income of any kind and eventually make their way totally into debt. And it's once everybody's pretty much in a massive state of debt, then you can pretty much just turn them into slaves. It's not that difficult. You give them lodgings in a slave block in a major city next to railroad tracks. You tell them that they have to go to work in order to get rations every day. And people will do it because they've got no other choice. They have to survive. And they don't know how to grow food. They've never lived in a farm. They've never so much as planted a freaking carrot seed. They'll be completely dependent, just the way the New World Order wants them.
Emma, there's the other dynamic of understanding how there's different kinds of fear-based reactions. I mean, there's that one type of instinctual fear that takes place when you have danger headed your way and you have a fight-or-flight reflex response and you decide you're going to either get out of the way, you're going to try to escape, or you're going to fight that situation and try to survive. That's a very natural response, and you could say that's one element of fear. But that there's also the anxiety that is what I think they prey on. So if they can create a situation where everybody's in a situation of constantly being anxious about what's coming next, they play on that because that's the most powerful. Being more than an opponent in your mind, in your opponent's eyes, you know, being more than that, being bigger than you actually are, creating the illusion that there's another big collapse or a big calamity or a big disaster around the corner. Even though, of course, we know that there actually are some of those things, but they got to keep the mental state of everybody as, you know, fear, trepidation, constant anxiety, because that is the key, and that's actually the formal format of trauma-based mind control, is that they have to do it. It's not a sudden thing. It's something that is slowly done, and then that's how they manipulate the mind.
Fear turns off your cognitive function, and when you stop thinking, you start doing what you're told.
That's exactly right. Yep. No, it's exactly right. And they've done a lot of studies on this. Yeah.
That's the crux of the control. The individual, sentient, theoretically human, does have a level of control over this when they stop operating out of fear mode. Yeah. Most people have been conditioned from childhood up to run on fear. The adrenal glands pump. Our school systems are basically designed to install that. That meme is installed continuously as we go through culture. There's a reason why most secret societies use a trauma-based form of ritual as well. If we begin to what I was talking about earlier, become masters of our own sanctuary, our own mind, our own soul, our own spirit, and begin to throw off that fear, we have opportunities to make decisions point by point that move away from the control grid. I don't think we can change society as a whole with force. I don't think we can change it any other way than to begin initiating this type of thought into our own circles. In other words, this is an interchange that's going to move outward. And I guess I'm an optimist. I still sometimes think this is possible.
Well, I was just thinking about something David was saying just before about how you constantly have to live in anxiety because you're worried about what's coming around the corner and keeps you on edge and stops you from thinking, right?
Yeah.
Well, you know what stops you from worrying about what's going to happen next? Living in the moment.
Absolutely.
Boom! No, suddenly all your anxiety disappears. There is just right this second, and that's all there is, and it's constant. And what's really encouraging about that is this little moment that we're experiencing right now is infinite. It's stretched all the way out through history, and it's going to stretch out all the way through eternity. So in a way, we get to share a moment with everybody who has ever lived or whoever will. That's a very encouraging thought to me.
Absolutely it is. And you nailed it on the head, because when you think about what causes fear, and actually I grew up when I was young very much in a space of fear. I was afraid of my own shadow. I was, it was the climate that I was in when I was growing up. And it took me a long time to be able to finally rid myself of that. And so I can, you know, having that experience in my life at a younger age, I was able to learn from it and also to see it demonstrated in other people around me. And to realize that, you know, yeah, it's exactly it. You're either fearing something that's about to happen in the future, which of course hasn't happened yet, or you're dwelling on something that's taken place in the past, which of course you can't exactly go back and change. So really the only place where you're active, the only place where you do have choice, where you do have sort of control of your own life, your decisions, your destiny and everything else is in the moment. So of course that's where courage is found. And in reading a lot of the literature, studying different cultures and different warrior cultures and traditions that they would use to try to empower their people in their community so that they could defend themselves. This was very much a part of that, was to get them to meditate and to focus on becoming and living in the moment. Because if you can do that, then you will not be afraid of what the outcome is. A lot of those warriors would go into battle in their own mind. They sort of knew. They knew in their mind, okay, well, I'm going to die today, but I've faced my fear of it. And funny enough, it was those warriors that would walk out alive. And it was the ones that were always in constant fear. Oh my God, I could get stabbed by that guy. I could get hit by that spear, run over by that chariot or whatever. Those are the guys that actually, that's exactly what happened. So I think you sort of contribute to creating your own reality in that way. And so if you know that, man, that is a powerful piece of information.
Yeah, indeed. Of course, you don't create the entirety of your reality. Somebody said that to me once, and I was going, well, hold on a second. If you create your reality, what about the other 7 billion people?
Exactly.
Do you cancel them out? We'll be right back.
Yeah. Tonight we're going to make love. You know how I know? Because it's Wednesday. And Wednesday night is the night that we usually make love. It's because it's when everything is just right. There's nothing good on TV. You haven't had your social netball team practice, so you're not too tired. Oh yeah, sounds like it's all on. You say something to me like, I might go to bed, I've got work in the morning. But I know what you mean. You mean, oh yeah, it's business time. It's business time.
It's What do you mean? You mean it's business time.
Oh. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Thanks to sing this song, you know.
You tell me that you want to get me into massive debt and destroy my country, but I know what you mean. You mean, oh yeah, it's going to be good for business. And my very special guests are David Whitehead and Randy Morgans. This is Man Talk 4, ladies and gentlemen. I hope you've enjoyed the first three installments. We've been kind of trading places, so I'll host one Man Talk, David will host one, Randy will host one. We just kind of go around in that circle, sort of like it's been like once a month since we started. And it just kind of happened by accident. And most of the Man Talks also do as well. Just kind of go wherever the breeze blows, like Columbus. But anyway, what does it mean to be a man today? Well, you've got to have a nice watch, a great suit, clean shaven, of course, with some Calvin Klein deodorant, and also some beautiful, like, greasy hair product, and a real flashy belt buckle, you know, like a $100 bill, y'all, or something, you know. And some really, really awesome branded shoes, some branded sunglasses, and a flashy smile, and a nice car, and a good house that you've got to yourself, and liquor, and drugs, and a good career where you've got power over other people, unquestioningly. That's what a man is, ladies and gentlemen.
And you gotta have a copy of Grand Theft Auto 5 and probably a Maxim magazine subscription and a head full of knowledge about useless information that will never really affect you positively in your life. So,
like sport. Yeah,
exactly.
Sports trivia. I understand it. I mean, it's like a certain guy had a certain number of balls in a certain way and did so and so and blah, blah, blah. Okay. Does that change my reality, the fabric of space-time or something important?
Those words were too big for the average modern man to comprehend.
What, space-time? There are space only time, one syllable, motherfucker.
Okay, so you mentioned sports, and this is something I've been thinking about, and I have sons, so I've gone through various cycles over the years of dealing with the sports thing, and I was talking to someone, and I said, you know, the best it ever was for me was when I was probably 9 to 11 and playing, like, sandlot baseball somewhere. Hello?
Oh, yes, you're still there.
9/11 again.
Oh, no. Did I say 9/11?
9/11.
That was subliminal.
Subliminal, yeah.
That was subliminal, 9/11.
Yeah, ladies and gentlemen, you will forget this 9/11 reference. Pay no attention to the Rockefeller.
Pay no attention to that. That was very subliminal, wasn't it? But, you know, think about that for a minute.
I thought it was a Freudian slip, man.
Why does Freud get blamed for all this?
I don't know. Maybe because his name is near rhyme with the word fraud.
But, no, think about it. All sports is now is corporatism. And I grew up in a period when they groomed boys to go off and be baseball or football stars. They'd go to university, they'd get recruited, they'd be in the NFL, and they would be hawking soda and automobiles to the rest of consumer America for the sake of the corporations.
Well, if you think about the history of sport, I mean, sport was, you know, those games were played by children. I mean, that's where it used to be, and men would be out in the business world. But now they knew that if they could pack these huge stadiums, and this was actually written down. I mean, a lot of these guys, when they were these social engineers, which for people that aren't familiar with that term, is basically people that engineer society, and they actually, there is a science behind that. They were thinking about the best way to be able to castrate the male population so that they wouldn't be rising up and resisting what they had in plan to be coming in next. So the best way was to pack these large Coliseum-like stadiums full of thousands of screaming drunk men, of course, mostly between the ages of 20 and 30 years old, but of course now it's pretty much everybody. And if they could do that and then keep the women hooked on to the soaps and the gossip and all that kind of stuff, then they could get the kids into the school systems and they could completely bring them up and raise them themselves by the state and by the system, and you could disempower humanity very easily if you could keep their eye on the ball, as opposed to keeping their eye on the real ball, which is played on the geopolitical stage. So, yeah, the history of sport and the constant obsession with the modern male with it. I mean, there's nothing wrong with sport in itself, but it's just a matter of context and focus, I think.
It's about psychological castration, you know?
Yeah.
That's all it is, in my opinion. Because I see a lot of manliness and a lot of bravado amongst people who are, big sports fans, and so it's particularly when they're in a group. And it's actually quite rare for me to find like a really intelligent person who's into lots of really sophisticated subjects and things like that to be really into sport as well. Yeah. It's actually quite rare. It does happen on occasion, but it's more like I do a lot of thinking, but I also watch a little bit of sport here or there. You know, rather than sport is my life. I've got this car there and all these models and t-shirts and regalia and what have you. You know, those people, I've never met one of them that's real sharp Crayola. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, if they can create these superheroes, these modern god type characters, these gods, these people that you can worship, which are these, you know, sports celebrities, if you can get the men to want to constantly emulate those people and go and cheer for those people and constantly talk about those people, then those same men are not going to sit there and try to empower themselves to be as great or greater than the people that they are getting on their knees and worshiping and constantly focusing their attention on. So if you're focusing constantly on other people and what they're doing, what these multi-million dollar making sports celebrities are doing, then you're not focusing on your own life. And if you bring it back to the whole thing, we were talking about fear and anxiety, where, you know, you're supposed to be living in the present moment. How can you live in the present moment as an empowered man if you're constantly living in the moment of somebody else's life and trying to live your life vicariously through them and through your projection of who you think they are? And most of these guys aren't even close to a personality type that you would want to emulate or to have a child look up to, or how they're presented in the media. And I know that just from actually meeting and speaking with some of them. I have some friends that work at the airport, and they run into these guys all the time, and they're losers. You know, they really are. And it's not all of them, of course, not a general statement, but it just seems to come part and parcel with the job.
Yeah, there's something about becoming really, really wealthy and successful that turns you inexorably, this happens to a lot of people, not all, that turns you inexorably into a douchebag.
Yeah.
You've no longer got manners. You're suddenly all very pushy and rushy. You feel like you've got this kind of sense of self-importance. Like everybody owes you because you're famous. That's just freaking cold, disgusting, man. It should actually be the direct opposite. It should be even more open and more friendly than everybody else, because you've got something to celebrate, something to share, something to bring joy into people's lives. Why would you treat them badly when the people who are your adoring fans and what have you are actually the ones responsible for getting you where you are and keeping you in such high esteem? It smacks of arrogance and ungratefulness to me.
Well, again, this is a product of corporatism. This is the corporate culture. When you are, I don't know how much either of you engage with corporate America. I do it as little as possible, but I do have to deal with it. And the corporate mindset, at least here in the United States, with my observation, is that the sports metaphor plays very huge into corporate culture as well. I mean, even the language that you would hear in a boardroom or that you would hear in a sales meeting has to do with things that smack of that particular culture. Salespeople that I know who are in high-level corporate sales jobs live off their adrenaline. They're literally, every day is the big game for them. They literally have to sometimes take one for the team. There's just this whole blood sport mindset in corporatism that mirrors the sports metaphor, the sports metaphors that's given to us by big corporate sports conglomerates.
Okay, well, sorry about that. I had my mic muted. I couldn't find the frickin' button. That was weird. We'll be right back after the break, ladies and gentlemen, at thevinnieeastwoodshow.com. This is the Man Talk Project with David Whitehead. The world was meant to be free.com, I believe, is your website, right?
That's correct.
Yeah. Randy, you're going to be really upset that I can't remember yours.
It's offplanetradio.com.
Offplanetradio.com. All right. We'll be right back after this short break, ladies and gentlemen. Don't you go anywhere. Hour number two of the Man Talk Project 4. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. It is now hour number two of the fastest 2 hours in talk radio. It's the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live from New Zealand. This miraculously, shall we say, irradiated island-chained nation paradise. You've got to love it. There's Maldives in grass skirts running around, police beating them with batons. It's just beautiful. And my very special guests are Randy Morgans and David Whitehead. Now, what were we talking about just before? We were talking about sports. I might actually go so far as to say that I hate sports. Well, I hate sports so much that when there was a rugby game on TV and my flatmates were watching it, I watched it with them. So much did I dislike the sport and the boredom starting to set in and failing to see the point, I started to count advertisements that I saw within a 60-minute game. Oh, no, sorry, an 80-minute game. I found 67 different advertisements positioned around the stadium being flashed on the screen and taking little ad breaks and stuff like that, little insignias on their uniforms. It's holy shockingly, it's unbelievable. There ain't nothing to do with competition going on there, bro, apart from corporate competition. I'll sponsor these guys, you sponsor those guys, and we'll get them to bang their frickin' skulls together.
Oh, yeah. No, it's so true. And it's, I've always been more a fan of getting in there and doing things in real life as opposed to just watching them on a little screen in my living room. So, I mean, there's nothing wrong with getting out and hanging out with your friends and playing some sport on a Saturday afternoon. Maybe we'll have a barbecue or something and just sort of get to know your friends and your neighbors and get some friendly competition going. There's nothing wrong with that. I think that's great. But when you are watching people that, again, they get paid multi-millions of dollars to kick a ball around or throw a ball around or smack a ball around. Some this fascination with playing with balls that they have out there with the male population is just go watch those guys play with their balls, and then that way you can feel better about everything. And then they have little women walking around in their short skirts and their thong bikinis, and it keeps everybody sexually frustrated. And that way they get the exact type of commitment to the sport and to watching the sport and being addicted to it. And there's many different facets there that they use to keep the attraction going. And of course, that is, it's turning into the distraction, actually. So, yeah, I couldn't agree more, Vinny.
Yeah. Now, one time I asked an acquaintance of mine who was talking about the sports and all of that kind of thing, do you equate the success of your sports team with your personal success? And he said he did. And I go, okay, let's say your favourite rugby team or football team or whatever won the competition, whatever it is, World Series, etc., that year. Did your pocketbook get any heavier because of that victory? Did you make any money off of it? Did you gain any extra physical prowess over it, like you would perhaps if you were exercising? Did you have a profound change in your life? Did you actually accumulate something? Did anything that actually matters actually happen to you as a result of your team achieving a goal at a sports game? Nothing. For virtually anybody ever actually is tantamount to any kind of achievement that you try and live vicariously through a sports team. Doesn't frickin' exist, folks. You weren't on the field. You don't get to share the spoils. You're just a spectator that they're using so that they can sell crap to you. Get it through your thick frickin' skulls. They know how to manipulate you, and they're doing so for a very good reason. And it's not just the money. Because while they've got all your attention, they can do all sorts of other things because you'll be too focused on that to care. Did you know that the New Zealand election happened right in the middle of the Rugby World Cup in New Zealand, the biggest sports event that had ever been hosted here? And then, surprise, surprise, we have the lowest voter turnout since 1887, when women weren't even allowed to vote. It's not a coincidence, folks, that they do all the presidential elections at the same time as some other sports competition over there, where whether it be the football or the basketball or something else that involves balls. You know? And they've got you by them, ladies and gentlemen.
The identification with a team dynamic on the side of spectators is baffling to watch. I live here in Pennsylvania in the heartland of Penn State, and I guess you're aware of what's going on with Penn State and the pedophile rings that have been uncovered there.
Yeah.
The level of rabid commitment to people who are exposed as complete total scumbags is unbelievable to me. They roll out the PR, they gloss over everything, they admonish a few people, they hang a few people out to dry, but at the end of the day, these are not good people. The whole scandal that took place here with Jerry Sandusky, and he was the tip of the iceberg of something very horrific and ugly, and the pedophile rings that are run through the entertainment industry, the sports industry, the religious system, these are all symptoms of a deep sickness within the culture that are masked over by this mentality of group identification. And sports is just one more idiom of where that occurs.
Well, absolutely. And also an interesting thing to bring up, too, is the militarization of sports. And the when you go to, even when I go to the Air Canada Centre here in Toronto, been a couple times invited down to a sports game or a show, concert or whatnot. You go down there And wall to wall, you had advertisements of police recruiting, military recruiting. And then when you go and watch some of these big, huge NFL playoff games or NHL games, you have military coming onto the ice or coming onto the field, and people are getting awarded ribbons and medals and all kinds of stuff. You have major celebrities, you have political personalities showing up at these games, and you have all kinds of stuff. And of course, they sing the national anthem before every game commences, which is it's ingraining in people this idea, this false idea of patriotism. And not to say that you shouldn't be proud of your country and the home that you have and all the benefits that you share, but what we're talking about here is that they just want you to support different masks on the same face. So you, as long as you're in that mindset of competition and I want my team to win, and usually you're inebriated out of your mind by this point, and then you're sitting there, you know, singing your national anthem, and everybody has that sort of false pride, and then they can easily keep you subliminally entrained into the big team, which is that you're on Team Canada, you're on Team USA, you're on Team globalist banking fraternities, really, and team if Prada. You keep going along with it, then and you can't become aware of it, and you can't see the propaganda that's there, where they're advertising the military as if it's something that we need more money to go to the military so we can go and free other countries from their dictators or whatever. It's all part and parcel, it's all packaged together, and a lot of people, they don't have the intelligence to be able to see through it.
Yeah, I recall Bill Hicks saying back in the early 90s when gays wanted to be in the military, he said, "Gays want to be in the military? Here's how I feel about it. Anyone dumb enough to want to be in the military should be allowed in. That should be the only requirement. Yeah. I don't care how many push-ups you can do, put on a helmet, go sit in that foxhole. I'll tell you when we need you to kill somebody."
Exactly. Yeah.
Well, absent from everything we've talked about here regarding sports is this concept that I keep coming back to, which is honor. There is nothing wrong with teamwork. And David, you have a dojo. You train people in martial arts. You do competitive contests, I'm sure. But yeah, at the same time, there's a concept, and it's something that's kind of embedded in the best of martial arts, which has to do with honor. And maybe you can address that, because I don't have firsthand experience with it, but I see a total lack of honor on an individual basis. And even on a team level, everything is about the win. Everything is about glory, which is not the same thing. But honor seems to be lost in the equation of all of this.
Yeah, no, it is the foundation of these different disciplines, especially martial arts. And sadly, it's as bad, if not worse, in the area of competitive martial arts. If you remember that movie Karate Kid, probably one of the best movies made about martial arts, trying to illustrate the difference.
The original one.
Right? Yeah, the original one. Yeah. Not the Jackie Chan one, although Jackie Chan could be pretty fun to watch. But it was nothing like the original. Basically, they had the idea of the Cobra Kai dojo, right? The bad guys. They were the guys that the teaching at that school was a drill sergeant. He was out of Vietnam or something, and he was working his guys, and it was all about winning and doing anything to win, you know, sweep the leg, you know, all that kind of stuff. Well, sadly, of course, then you have the Mr. Miyagi character who is trying to teach Daniel-san all these different principles of martial arts, but really so that he can apply them to real life and to becoming an empowered individual. And you see the polarity demonstrated beautifully in that film. And sadly, the Mr. Miyagi type training or the concepts that they were using for that character are lost in the martial art world, and they all have pretty much been turned into these Cobra Kai type dojos. Most dojos these days have been just turned into MMA training fight factories, where you walk in there, everybody's eyeing you up, you got to put a pair of gloves on, get in the ring, and you're a fresh piece of meat for that day. It's not really about instilling values, principles, the seven tenets of the code of Bushido or any of that kind of stuff. And I actually did an interview recently with Dr. Bodie Sanders, who's a three-time black belt Hall of Famer, and he wrote a great book called The Wisdom Warrior. And he was talking about it. We were talking about this exact subject, about how sports and especially martial arts has been degraded to such a degree. And it's just like we see everywhere else. It's the same thing. I mean, I'm sure we talked to people that came up in, you know, I live in Canada. Hockey's the big sport here. And I talked to some of the old timers, and they're like, you know, hockey was just something we got together. We'd play it on the out with the community. Everybody comes out, they sit and have hot chocolate, you know, it was just part of it was a pastime. But now, even on Team Canada, there's all these Americans and Swedes and Swedes, there's all these different people from different nationalities playing for Team Canada, it's so ridiculous.
I believe if you have somebody from Sweden who's playing for Team Canada, that's called an artificial Swedener.
Well, exactly, you know, and it's just so basically what I'm trying to say is that you're right, it's completely opposite of what it should be, and it would be nice to have some role models out there for young people to look up to, because I agree, there's nothing wrong, especially for young people, with sports and getting out there and doing that, that's great. But when the whole goal is to get out there and make millions of dollars and be that celebrity mindset and crush your competition at all costs, and you know, it's all about having managers. I mean, behind every single one of these celebrities is like 20 or 30 guys. They got a team of lawyers, they got managers, they got producers, they've got people that design the way they're supposed to have their head, you know, their hair shape.
Psychopaths need an entourage.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. So it's just totally twisted these days, man.
Well, it's about core values. And I remember when I was in high school, when you first starting to get like interested in women and things like that, and all these guys had all these despicable, terrible plans of how to get women in the sack, and I was just, you know, kind of saying to them, you know, that's just not honourable, bro. You know, you got to do it the honourable way. You got to do it right. You got to pay respect and be good and that kind of thing. What was strange about growing up is that it wasn't just the men who were unhonorable, it was the women too.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Well, it seems to be, like we were saying, I think in one of the previous Man Talk projects, we were talking about how there seems to be different kinds of targeting for men and women. So women, of course, they get led down the whole, you know, playing hard to get and being raised on this superficial Sex in the City type culture and this mindset of being too good for being a mother and a wife, you know. But now it's all about being Miley Cyrus on stage grinding with a bunch of rappers or whatever. And then, of course, on the men, it's about being everything's about sex, everything's about power, money, ego, success, and all that kind of stuff. And it's just very, very interesting to see how it's played in the media and how they play in all the television shows and movies, how they play these two characters against each other. And then what happens is, you know, monkey see, monkey do. This is what we do. We start to emulate these people. It's the same strategy with advertising. A lot of these advertisements we see are goofy, and you're like, oh, there's no way I would ever fall for that. There's no way I'd ever buy that product. That was the stupidest commercial I've ever seen. But it's on a subliminal level. And so a lot of people, they don't even know that their mind is actually being assaulted with this, because they want you disempowered. They don't want you connected to your true masculinity or your true femininity.
Yeah, that I have an affinity for masculinity and femininity, you know.
See,
apparently so does amenity.
Well, and speaking of, you know, they have the whole effeminate kind of thing going on. I don't know if you guys have been following what's been going on with this Russell Brand thing, where this guy is being touted around as sort of the new messiah of the truth movement, and everybody's kind of buying into it. And I don't know, he said some things that, of course, I can agree with in terms of identifying some of the problems. But we do have to remember that this guy's a multimillionaire working out of Hollywood, and we can't hold that against him. I mean, we need people within the mainstream community to come out and start joining this fight as well. But then when you start asking him what the solution should be, he starts saying things like, let's have a socialist libertarian system where we have some kind of a and we'll just rename what government is called, and we'll just have some collectivist sort of a hive mind type thing, and that's where freedom lies, where we have a massive redistribution of wealth and heavy taxation. And of course, when you look historically at any of these different things, none of these things work. It ends up turning back into another form of collectivist control. So I don't know. I just find it interesting that the media is pumping this guy out there like steroids.
Well, I think the alternative media listeners, in particular the listeners to this show, aren't easily swayed by people anymore. Have you noticed that? Have you noticed how many false messiahs we've all had to like come and save us, and then you find out there's something disappointing about them and then you just don't trust them anymore? Right?
Yeah.
People are actually getting their stuff together, man. We'll be right back, ladies and gentlemen, at thevinnieeastwoodshow.com. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, the place where you can find any number of artificial sweeteners.
And I honestly wish we were, you know, television, because this picture of Russell Brand. Sorry, listeners, you won't get this one.
Whoa. we'll put that on the YouTube.
If you picture in the background of this video for the whole 2 hours, just to torture anybody.
It's actually kind of hot, you know.
Oh, I think I threw up in my mouth a little. Just a little. What we're looking at, ladies and gentlemen, is kind of like almost a female Russell Brand, but wearing sort of like a unitard sort of thing. It's like Arnold Schwarzenegger's body with a feminine Russell Brand's head kind of thing.
With a
swimming unitard. It's pretty disgusting, bro.
Yeah, it is actually. Yeah, so.
I'm going to close that now. Let's go.
I feel defiled.
Gone. Yeah, ooh. Sorry. That guy's it just kind of spit my water out of my mouth when I saw it, and I had to share.
Well, let's talk about the God complex, right?
There you go.
Savior complex, Messiah complex. There's freaking everybody's looking for somebody to come and save them from something. Oh, maybe it'll be Russell Brand. Yeah, Russell Brand's going to be the Messiah, bro. Russell Brand, who has Cheeky Chucha with goodness knows how many girls on a weekly basis, and been in a long-term relationship in his broken life, calls himself a genius and even calls his entire tour about being a savior.
The other messiahs and saviors are late for the party, so maybe he's just the best person that could be sent. I don't know.
This is the best society can produce, okay? It's garbage in... garbage out.
Yeah.
The Messiah thing doesn't really work out real well. That usually gets you killed. So,
that's true.
Look at what happened to Charlie Sheen. Charlie Sheen came out hardcore for 9/11 truth, right? And then he starts getting sabotaged. His cars get stolen. His TV show gets cancelled. He gets his entire life messed up, and his mind goes out of control. He starts drinking again, and the New World Order can really, really frack you if you're famous and powerful and influential, and you come out for something as controversial as supporting a conspiracy theory or supporting positive change. Don't you think?
Well, it's funny because even when Charlie Sheen was bringing Well, sorry, I was just going to say, even when he was bringing it up, he was just asking questions, wasn't he? The whole point was that he was just like, hey, we got questions. And you can't even ask those questions if you're in those positions, because then you're going to get other people to start asking questions. And then they're going, three buildings, two planes, less than 10 seconds, free full speed. Yeah, that doesn't make any sense. And then they're going to go, yeah, we can't have a mainstream celebrity out there making people actually think about these types of things. So I think that's what it is.
Is it a matter of time? Because Charlie Sheen was able to come out public for a substantial period of time before it really started to come down on him hard.
Oh, yeah.
And so maybe Russell Brand this time next year will be off this train, and he'll be going back to making comedy movies, doing tours and things like that, and generally having a laugh.
Russell Brand has not brought anything to the table in terms of contributing to a conversation that's enlightening. What he has done is trotted out Marxism, socialism, basically contributing to the dialectic that, well, capitalism screwed us now. Like, yeah, we've had capitalism on a grand scale, haven't we? So now let's try socialism. In other words, this is a move by whoever handles him, his Tavistock handlers, to push us back into the corner where we move into socialism again. It is the same Hegelian dialectic that has been bannered back and forth since the beginning of the 20th century, and we just keep buying it.
But he did put a Guy Fawkes mask on in a big march, or what was that? That million mask march or whatever. And so apparently he's on our side. And of course, that's how they try to portray these types of things, is to get you again focusing, as we were talking about with these sports celebrities, getting even people that would otherwise want to be questioning what's going on, and they see somebody out there talking about the problems and saying, hey, yeah, that makes sense. I want to hear what that guy has to say. And of course, he's a multi-million-dollar celebrity.
And then they say, thank Fawkes for that.
Yeah, exactly. And so it's sort of the whole problem, reaction, solution thing. And we just have to be careful what kind of Pied Pipers we start following down the path, because this has never worked out well. And of course, they do realize that people are waking up. So let's not kid ourselves. There is a genuine awakening taking place. There are genuine people out there that are trying to disseminate this information and try to wake people up and assist with bringing ideas forward for change. That's great. And hopefully more people come out from within these mainstream establishments and from the media and whatnot. But we do know that this guy's on the air. He's not getting cut off. And they're not rushing a commercial break, and they're not jeering at him that much, and they're giving him plenty of airtime and plenty of publicity, and they're making t-shirts all over the place about this guy. So this guy's being put out there because they want him out there. Anybody that's been a real whistleblower or a real person coming out from within, like Vinny brought up Charlie Sheen and all these other people, they have been marginalized, ostracized, ridiculed, and completely shut down. So
this talk that we're very happening about Russell Brand, and actually most of the talk around the alternative media doing that exact same thing to Russell Brand that the mainstream media did to Charlie Sheen? Have we become the very aggressors that we purport to oppose?
Well, maybe not aggressors, but just pointing out the fact that we're spotting, we're calling it what it is, you know, and we're suspicious now. And I think that that's good. And I'm not insulting the man personally. I don't know him personally. That's what I've always said. It's like, I don't know the guy. But I'm just saying that we're listening to what he's saying, and we're looking at the evidence of the fact that he's being supported by the media, even though it looks like they're out there debating him and he's having all these heated debates with people. The fact that they're even allowing him to talk, some people might say, well, that's a good thing, isn't it? Well, it's never worked out very well historically. And I'm just saying that I'm suspicious, and I'm encouraging people to remain suspicious, not critical, not calling them names, and not, being too hard on them. It's more about being aware of the possibility of what Randy was pointing out there.
Yeah, you could be taken for a ride.
Well, we talk about the alternative media space. There is no real collective consensus. If you look at the spectrum of people who you would consider to be alternative media, it's a very, very wide group of people who hold very diverse opinions. We and even using we is dicey, but we seem to hold certain opinions about certain things. On the other hand, it's very diverse. I think this is a much healthier environment in terms of productive media than the kind of backroom clatching that goes on in major media, where everything's handled, everything's controlled, there's a script, there are very much a lack on the part of network anchors, newscasters, and people like that to actually think for themselves or to do authoritative research. In this space, at least there are people out there who do disagree. And I actually find it very refreshing to get people who criticize me, who call me on the rug for something that I've said or something that I believe. I think this is healthy. And I think anybody that wants to be in the media space needs to man up. Man up. to the fact that we are open to criticism. We are open to having our ideas examined in a dialogue.
It's good when you're honest. You don't have to remember anything.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
Be yourself.
Yep, I was wrong. Sorry. Didn't know.
I want to be wrong. Look, I've been proven wrong many times in my life, and it's actually for me, I'm like, wow, that's perfect. You know, like I said, I grew up training martial arts, and if I was just perfect at everything I did every single time and nailed it 100%, no problem, I wouldn't really learn anything. I'd probably be an arrogant jerk. And I think that there's something humbling about failing. And I usually use a statistic in martial arts. You'll probably fail at these learning these techniques 100 times to 1 minimum before you're actually going to nail it. And there's that very humble process that has to be brought to bear when you're trying to pursue anything, whether it's knowledge, whether it's understanding, whether it's learning a technique, whether it's learning a musical instrument, whether it's becoming more a better husband, wife, father, whatever. No matter what you're doing, you need to have that humility. And I actually embrace when I'm wrong, because it means now I have an opportunity to grow. Now I can reassess things, because I personally only care about truth. I only care about what's real. I don't want to be, you know, thinking about something that's erroneous or not factual. And I know, they always say wisdom is knowing how little you know. And in the grand scale of the cosmos and the situation that we live in, I think that we should be facing that with a certain amount of humility. So for me, being proven wrong is part of brilliance. It's part of progression.
Yeah, I just assume that I'm wrong. And it turns out that I'm right.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, no, that's right. Yeah. I mean, some of the stuff I wish we weren't right about, but sadly, you know, the facts speak for themselves, you know what I mean?
Yeah, that whole humility thing, I think it's almost like you need to, I wouldn't say guilt, I wouldn't say be apologetic, but there's something about being human that separates you from, say, a psychopath is regret, remorse, being genuinely apologetic, being humble.
And humility.
Mm-hmm. If you're willing to admit your faults and say, I've been wrong before, and or say, I'm very, very sorry and genuinely mean it, then there's something good about you. There's some genuine humanity there. Try and get a psychopath to do anything like that? They can't. They literally freaking can't do it. Yet anybody ever apologize to you, and the way that they apologize to you is say, I'm sorry that you feel that way. There's nothing genuine about that. And that's what I really, really don't like about dishonest people. Because you don't know whether or not they're being genuine. I know I'm being genuine, have been from day one, don't plan to change my tune anytime soon. And the good thing about being honest and genuine when you've got listeners is that you know that those listeners keep listening not because you're projecting a false facade or manipulating them or using tactics and what BS and actually thinking about it. People still listen to the show because they know I'm the genuine article. I'm not there to stab you in the back and mislead you intentionally. Not a bad guy. I'm just human. Like you.
Yeah, we all make mistakes.
I appreciate
that. Yeah,
I mean, you name me one person who hasn't made a mistake in their life. Name me one. They don't freaking exist. Right? Name me one person who's never fallen for a single lie in their life. They don't freaking exist. I say get used to it. Get used to it and enjoy it. Hey, I was lied to, really horribly deceived the other day. Nah, bro, that's awesome. You probably won't be deceived by the same lying scumbaggery filth again, will you? Nah, it's great. I want to be lied to and deceived even more and then find out that I was wrong. That way, I'll actually be able to learn something of value about life and develop some kind of discernment. Kind of like in the days of marathon, when, hey, you didn't know that you could run so many umpteen miles in order to get to a particular place to defend it from attack until you suddenly had to, right? Necessity, as they say, is the mother of all invention. And I think what's happening nowadays, guys, is that people are realizing how feminized all the men are becoming, how masculine all the women are becoming, and how unbalanced the entire human race is becoming. And I think we've discovered the necessity to start moving back the other way to restore those things that were once of value and commonly united us in a decent, honorable culture.
Yeah, and people should be they should be able to understand that people like the three of us here. I mean, we all conduct radio shows. We do a lot of research. We work with and speak to a lot of people that are doing various forms of research into these different fields. And we all can agree on the fact that there's something wrong. There's a problem. There is these things that you were just talking about, Vinny. And we do see that there is nefarious activity going on. There's corruption going on. And we need to basically keep looking into that. We can't be held if we make little tiny mistakes here and there on little details. And we got to start finding where we agree.
And you can't start arguing with people and say, oh, stop mentioning that there's evil out there and trying to expose it. You're just giving them power by exposing them and destroying their secrecy.
Yeah, right. We'll
be right back.
Look at me, driving and I won't stop. And it feels so good to be alive and on top. My reach is global, my tower secure. My cause is noble, my power is pure. I can hand out a million vaccinations, or let them all die in exasperation. Have them all healed from the lacerations, have them all killed by assassination. I can make anybody go to prison just because I don't like them. And I can do anything with no permission. I have it all under my command because I can guide a missile by satellite. By satellite, by satellite. And I can hit a target through a telescope, through a telescope, through a telescope. And I can end the planet in a holocaust, 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 in a holocaust.
Yeah, we gotta bring the music down. All right. It's now the final segment of the Man Talk Project 4 with my special guest, David Whitehead from theworldwasmeanttobefree.com and Randy Morgans from offplanetradio.com. And we have a final discussion point. What you resist persists. This is a philosophy that's going around. If the founding fathers had that philosophy, there would be no such thing as America. If Britain had that kind of philosophy during World War II, there would be no such thing as Britain. You know, you just imagine all these English people running around in the streets, you know, like early onset New Ages, and they're going, oh, don't fight back against the Germans. No, there'll be way more of them. What you resist persists. Just let them take over us and put us all in freaking camps. I mean, what are you, insane? Resisting tyranny is just foolish. It doesn't work. It doesn't work.
Oh, it's just ridiculous.
I really want to be a slave. I just love being a slave so much that I completely deny reality, history, and even common frickin' sense. This is why I have renamed common sense platinum sense, because it's one of the rarest frickin' elements you can ever find.
That's a good one. Yeah, no, this thing, I've I've spoken to a lot of people about this, and I think that there is an actual way to interpret what you resist persists, but it has nothing to do with tyranny or resisting the evil that we see all over the place. And it'd be like saying that the more that we try to fix the situation taking place within Fukushima, where we have these power plants melting down and basically contributing to all kinds of problems radiating the planet. If we didn't resist that, if we didn't formulate some kind of an opposition to that, then of course that would mean annihilation. And if we don't resist this global police state that's coming in every day, every minute of every day, it's more and more, it's enhancing all the time. If we don't resist that in any way and stand up for our rights and our freedoms, if we don't have any kind of spirit of rebellion in that sense, then we are going to be in the same situation that we've been really throughout history, because people, you know, they only have resisted a little bit, and the powers that be are very good at keeping you in a mindset that if you resist them, it's futile. And that really reminds me of, was it the Borg? Resistance is futile. So if they can
assimilated.
Make you believe that, then they got you.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that resisting and winning is very encouraging. The problem is people try to resist, you know, you're familiar with the phrase picking your battles, right? They go up against things that are way, way beyond them and are surprised when they fail and then disillusioned. I'm going to go out and I'm going to wake up 1,000 people today in the street by ranting at them through a megaphone. You freaking idiot. It's not going to work. Okay, this is a long protracted war. Think about this. It's taken, goodness knows, at least hundreds, possibly thousands of years in order for the elite bloodlines and what have you, in order to get their freaking system up to this point where people are so freaking asleep they can barely see their hand in front of their face because it's blocked by a freaking iPhone. Okay? And you think you're just going to go out one day and reverse hundreds to thousands of years of psychometric conditioning because you've got the truth on your side. Truth is not enough. Truth is not enough. Tactic, ladies and gentlemen. Manners. There's a whole bunch of things that have been tried and failed. And many more that have been tried and worked. And I say that everybody's got a methodology that works for them. What works for you? Well, if you're having fun while doing it, and you're not getting into outrageous arguments and fights and what have you, then it might actually be starting to get pretty effective, don't you think? If you get these people to listen to you and actually think about it by themselves for a minute, you don't have to wake them up. And indeed, I don't think you can. Everybody wakes themselves up. It's just other person that gives them the clue that there's actually something to wake up to. Nobody forced me to sit down in front of a computer almost every day and watched like 2 full documentaries for like 6 months solid. Nobody forced me to do that. I had a thirst for the truth. The people who gave me that thirst for the truth were the people who were trying to tell me it. But I didn't wind up hanging on every single word that they said, because they couldn't talk long enough to fulfill my need for truth. Such was my thirst. And I think everybody else needs to understand that very important principle. Don't make yourself responsible for waking everybody else up. It's not your frickin' job. It's your job to play your part. Because everybody knows that it costs, takes about maybe 7 people, 7 different people at different times telling you the same thing before that statement will become self-evident to you. All right? So just play your frickin' part, ladies and gentlemen. Don't say, oh, if I say something, they might get angry with me. It's an information grenade. Just pull the pin, chuck it in, and then frickin' walk away. Let it blow up in their face. Okay? It's not your responsibility to save the human race by yourself. I hate to say, kind of collective effort, but it really is. We're all working for the same goal. We all come to the truth in our own way, through our own unique little path, don't we? So we've all got our own unique spin on things. And I say that that is the thing that gives us diversity. And you know what diversity gives you? Resilience. Because everything that's monoculture that's in nature, there is no frickin' monoculture. There's no frickin' fields ploughed with corn, only one frickin' type of corn. Is there? Because all of that stuff will just die, get overgrown. People have over-specialized everything that they do. You've got to spread your frickin' net far, don't you? Different groups of friends, different volunteer projects, different jobs, different sources of income, this kind of thing. If you're locked into one specific lifestyle and you have no outs, no other rudimentary support structures out there, then you're basically dependent and you're at the will of whoever is capable of turning your money off. That's what the bankers want. Don't do it. All right. I've said my piece.
Go ahead, Randy. You haven't said anything, man. Go ahead. What do you think about all this stuff?
Well, we were talking originally in this conversation about resisting, not resisting things. That which you resist persists. Look, you have to have wisdom in order to engage in a battle. And as I think we've all said, you know, the scale of this thing is huge. If we look at the size of the mountain, we'll never climb it. But you don't climb a mountain in one jump. It is a gradual process. And each day when you get up and you make the decision to operate in integrity and honor and truth and attempt to impart those values to other people, that's how you begin to wake people up. But it's, as Vinny said, it's not our job. The people who are going to hear this are the people who need to hear it now, and the other people will come along later. But to say that you don't resist something is ridiculous. I've heard the New Agers. I've heard the people who want to misquote the Bible and say, well, Jesus said, resist not evil. Well, I think he was pretty pissed off when he threw those bankers out of the temple. And I think when he called the Pharisees snakes and vipers, he was kind of upset and he was kind of pushing against it. But he used wisdom. And I think if you go back and you look through history at the great leaders, that's what they did. They understood when to push, they understood when to step back, and they understood when it was just time to exercise wisdom. And that's how you sustain the energy for a long battle against a very big enemy.
And a very unfunny enemy. And it's the point of the show, ladies and gentlemen, is not to wake you up. Okay? If you listen to the show, you're probably already awake to a large extent. Mm-hmm. My objective is just to keep you sane. All right. That's why I'm so silly. You think I could take all of this stuff seriously 24/7 like I used to earlier on in the day without this coping mechanism of just making fun of it in order to make light of it so that it doesn't freaking drive me insane? No. We're all suffering this inordinate continental disease of globalist scumbaggery. And I think that having some faith, good sense of humour, and a good heart is the cure. All we've got to do is just spread that cure around, all right? Inject it into people's frickin' veins. Oh, yeah. Give me an IV of that, please. Give me a big bowl of the red pills. Throw those blue ones away. I want to wake up. I don't want to go back to sleep because I've really got to take a leak, you know?
It's really about taking the leak, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. It's called a leak of faith. We'll see you again sometimes, ladies and gentlemen. Hopefully. Okay. Randy Morgans, offplanetradio.com. Thank you very much. And David Whitehead from theworldwasmeanttobefree.com. All the archives for this show and many others are at thevinnyeastwoodshow.com. You should be able to find the archives and the commercial-free ones there. Donate if you can. We'll see you again sometime, folks.
This next announcement is serious news, and you won't hear it in the mainstream media. We're living in an age full of catastrophic events, and it's getting worse. But before we go on, remember this website, highgrounds.us. In the past 2 decades, natural disasters have increased by 800% within the U.S. alone. Cataclysms like Hurricane Katrina killed and displaced thousands because they were not prepared. And the 2008 economic collapse could happen again, but be much, much worse. So type this into your web browser, highgrounds.us. Highgrounds.us is your complete source for family survival necessities. You'll find food and water with a shelf life of 25 to 30 years, plus tents, portable containers, light, heat, first aid, and much more. Go to our website, highgrounds.us, or call 1-888-202-9094. Place your order now and be prepared. That's H-I-G-H, highgrounds.us. Hope for the best, but prepare for the worst. Highgrounds.us.
Have you been feeling off lately? Tired, depressed, or in pain? Maybe you've tried doctors and medications without luck. What if you could try something different and natural? Something that helps your body actually heal itself? I'm Trina, and I want to share with you something amazing I've discovered. RNA drops are a groundbreaking invention for alternative health. I had a rotator cuff injury from softball, and I didn't really want surgery. My cousin told me to try the RNA drops. I wasn't sure what to think, but kept an open mind. And after using the drops, I was completely healed and could throw the softball again. There's something about these drops. I had problems with anxiety and speaking in front of people. Those fears are all gone now. I also noticed more energy, and a surprising side effect for me was an increased libido. You can try RNA drops for free for a limited time. Go to trinasgooddrops.com and claim your free bottle. Pay only shipping and handling. Resolve to be good to yourself and get your free sample of RNA drops at trinasgooddrops.com.
You're listening to AmericanFreedomRadio.com, the network who perseveres in delivering intelligent debate, constructive dialogue with true independence. The freedom to broadcast the truth is not free at all. So what is American Freedom Radio worth to you? The empowering information with fun, honest and pure integrity behind it provides an example to follow. Friendships to flourish with the moral altruism that pulls no punches. The hosts sacrifice and show remarkable discipline in their duty to deliver quality radio in service to the community with strength, wisdom and loyalty. The founders of AFR wish to thank you personally for sharing your views and insights to make the best radio and alternative media. Now it's time for you to give something back and play a vital role in the future of America. Be as generous with us as we've been with you. Click on the donate banner at AmericanFreedomRadio.com or volunteer by emailing AmericanFreedomRadio@ymail.com. Vaccines, psychotropic drugs and artillery batteries not included. Has your heart been pounding? Feel short of breath? Got high blood pressure or problems sleeping? Heart disease is a leading cause of death. Being surrounded by fast food, toxic air, and poisoned water has a cumulative effect as we enter later life. Medications that only address symptoms ensure these problems persist, while your family and finances suffer. It's time to work with the body and its own innate ability to heal itself. Heart and Body Extract is a natural, organic herbal supplement that restores balance. A heart attack could be just around the corner. Spare your loved ones pain and fear. Protect yourself, protect your health with Heart and Body Extract. With a lifetime money-back guarantee, you have no excuse. Order a 2-month supply today. Call toll-free 866-295-5305. That's 866-295-5305. Or order online at hbextract.com.
No rules, no rules, no taboo topics, no taboo topics, no fear of doom, no fear of doom. We are American Freedom Radio, American Freedom Radio.